By way of contrast to the natural landscape, Alliance offers us Carhenge. Built by Jim Reynders as a memorial to his father, it was dedicated at the June 1987 summer solstice. Carhenge is formed from vintage American automobiles, painted grey to replicate Stonehenge, that mysterious stone circle constructed by my Neolithic ancestors in Britain. Is Carhenge art or junk? A tourist attraction or object of ridicule? Quirkily enhancing or demeaning to Alliance as a community? Such questions initially vexed a sceptical local authority, but Alliance councilman Earl Jones told me that such was Carhenge's popularity, the town council came round to support and to eventually acquire the site. Alliance provided several illustrations, historic and contemporary, of a pioneering spirit that is alive and well in western Nebraska. Earl explained that he and his wife Patricia had agreed they would not complain about community matters unless they were prepared also to do something about it. That philosophy led to Earl running for and being elected to the town council last December. When I commented on this can-do attitude, Patricia and Earl deflected, noting instead the pioneering heritage of this region. I needed to see Dobby's Frontier Town where, they told me, among other whimsical attractions, I could walk through the cabin of Robert Ball Anderson. A former slave in Kentucky, Anderson became Nebraska's first African-American homesteader and, by 1910, Nebraska's largest African-American landowner. Notwithstanding continuing racial tensions around the country, Anderson was acknowledged by his fellow community residents as an admirable and tenacious pioneer settler. By remarkable coincidence, during my brief period in Alliance, I happened to meet John in town for a few days from Oregon. During a meandering, intelligent, and intimate conversation, John told me he was the great-grandnephew of Robert Ball Anderson. John was born and raised around Alliance, but since college had departed for high-flying professional roles, which have taken him around the world. John's relationship with the area is one, like most relationships, that defies easy articulation. It includes the fondness and comforting familiarity inherent in the place of one's upbringing, as well as a feeling of disconnection and displacement that arises when your eyes have turned to broader horizons. In many respects, John had adventured into new realms, and I thought of him as a 21st century version of his pioneering forebears, drawn by his curiosity and ambition to unknown, fresh frontiers. It was the lure of new opportunity that drew thousands west. Around 24 miles to the east of Scotts Bluff, or 2 days' travel 150 years ago, the wagon trains of the Oregon and Mormon trails passed the iconic presence of Chimney Rock. This unusual edifice was the most remarked upon Nebraskan feature in the journals of those venturing along these trails. Like me, many of us will recognize Chimney Rock as the profile on the Nebraska quarter coin. To be in its physical presence, however, is a more beguiling experience. Chimney Rock pricks the sky in defiance of what I would expect in the natural world. In that defiant improbability, perhaps it is the perfect metaphor for the aspirations and achievements of those travelling within its site. Maybe it should come as no surprise that there remains an imprint or some essence of those early pioneers in the community spirit here. Billy Estes is the executive director of the Midwest Theatre in downtown Scotts Bluff and seems, to me, to be something of a pioneer of the modern era. When he was only 12 and while being homeschooled, Billy founded and ran a successful six-figure business breeding pedigree dogs. He sent dogs to 47 states and to 5 countries. I figured out the whole internet marketing thing when it was new, Billy told me. Age 17, he left the family farm around Anselmo for Bible college in Scotts Bluff, though rapidly found himself increasingly engaged in the Midwest theater. Ironically, having thought he had escaped the farm life, Billy has now surprised himself in relishing the farming he recently began on his nearby land. When I asked Billy, what is the community's secret sauce, he immediately replied,
"It's the pioneer spirit of the West. There's something I feel like you get past west of Ogallala, you know, I feel like the mentality of who lives out here is different than who lives on the Eastern side. And there's nothing wrong or right about one or the other. I just feel like that maybe we're the people that are here, let's say that are second or third generation, I think they're the remnants of those people that have the pioneers that were on the Oregon Trail that said, this is home, and we're going to make our life, and we're going to make what we want. That's what I think it is. It's this overwhelming drive to make our community better, and it's in every age of person, I feel like.
For many pioneers, Scott's Bluff marked the end only of the first third of their trail, though it was my most westward stop. Between 1841 and 1869, over 350,000 people traveled west on the Oregon and Mormon trails, passing beneath these buttes rising 800 feet above. The west of Nebraska resonates still with the mass migration of people across these grasslands, their wonder at the natural marvels, and with their heritage of adventure, ambition, and determination. It lives on in the legacy of the people making change in their communities today, overlooked by these remarkable Nebraska landmarks, enveloped in the fertile possibilities of the plains.